This week, Bitcoin blasted to an all-time record high, nearly 8,000, while gold and silver added to recent gains. Welcome back, everyone. It's just great to be back with you with another GoldSeek.com radio episode. Your host, Chris Waltzek, here with you with another Muy Grande-sized show, two more big guest interviews, and the Q&A segment where we open up the phone line and the digital mailbag to field all your questions and comments. And for folks who haven't yet received their free Ledger wallet, this is a neat cold storage wallet for your crypto coins, your Bitcoin, SegWit, and Bitcoin Gold. If you haven't yet signed up for an annual subscription for a limited time, we're giving a free Ledger wallet away with every new annual subscription and two for 5-year subscriptions. We've already given away 6 just in the past 4 days. So be sure and get your wallet. If you sign up, we have one for you. You won't miss out if you sign up before Monday morning. Well, it was a roller coaster week for Bitcoin. Digital money flew higher to about 8,000 on news that the SegWit 2X had been canceled. That's right, the developers could not reach a consensus, so for the time being, at least probably for the rest of this year and early into next year, no hard fork. In other words, no big dividend. So folks quickly locked in some profits from around 7,900, but still within a nice uptrend for the time being. And of course, Bitcoin and the cryptocurrencies, a major topic with my first guest, John Scursi, head of Corona Associates Capital Management, noting that blockchain is here to stay and truly innovative. However, he is concerned by the fact that only 4% of Bitcoin holders control 90% of the market. And then Gerald Celente, longtime friend of the show, returns from the Trends Research Institute. He shares my enthusiasm for Bitcoin and related altcoins, and he outlines his favorite altcoins in his portfolio. And we have our Q&A hotline, 641-715-3900, extension 514049. You might jot this down, please, on a post-it pad, put it right next to your phone, or just plug it right into and program it into your mobile phone or home phone. 641-715-3900, mailbox number 514049, and you can reach us anytime, day or night, 7 days a week. Robert Ian wraps up the show with his latest report. And again, another quick reminder, this weekend alone, you get a free Ledger wallet. It's actually shipped the day you place an order for a 1-year subscription to our Alpha Stocks Bitcoin newsletter. So don't miss out on this opportunity, limited to this weekend. GoldSeek.com radio begins now with the market weather recap. Mostly sunny skies were seen over the precious metals market this week. On news, the U.S. dollar dropped sharply following disappointing reports on U.S. tax reforms. News that the tax bill put forth in the Senate would delay corporate tax cuts as it did not match up well with the U.S. House legislation. Gold added $5, though, up to $12.74, while silver picked up about 4 cents, finishing at $16.87 an ounce. Precious metal shares gave back fractionally, ending near the break-even point. Black gold continued its climb, adding over a dollar, finishing at $56.74. However, the Bitcoin ETF, after hitting a slight new high, dropped just 70, ending at 880. And the Bitcoin Investment Trust is up still over 600% year to date, about 1,000% since we first started watching it. The big story on Bitcoin this week, we already touched on it. SegWit 2X was canceled Wednesday night. And of course, the developers just couldn't come to a consensus as one could imagine. It really could threaten or jeopardize the stability of Bitcoin. And there was serious replay concerns where if you were to make a transaction with Bitcoin either before, during, or after the fork, you might lose some or all of your Bitcoin. That does not inspire confidence. We did hit an all-time high following the announcement, and then folks, of course, locked in some profits because Bitcoin no longer carried that 20 or so percent dividend yield. As you'd expect, there would have to be a decline. The top story driving the precious metals, plus news that Americans were filing for unemployment benefits at a higher rate, indicated some sluggishness in the domestic economy. The Fed funds futures indicate the overnight lending rate will inch higher there at the next FOMC meeting slated for December, odds favor a hike of around 92%. So it's pretty much a sure bet right now. Precious metals, bottom line. The CRB and crude oil continue to fly higher, as I mentioned. We still have some sluggishness in the precious metals. It looks like we'll need some backing and filling before they take off, like the commodities index and the energy sector. Moving on to the Wall Street Report, partly cloudy skies over the New York Stock Exchange. Global equities and domestic shares ended the longest winning streak in almost 14 years on disappointing employment numbers and issues with the much-anticipated U.S. corporate tax relief efforts. The Dow Jones dropped 117, closing at 23,422. The S&P 500 dropped just 7, finishing at 25,82. And the NASDAQ was off 13,50, ending at 67,51. Meanwhile, corporate tax relief, or the lack thereof, was the topic du jour on Wall Street. Clearly, shares slid following months of higher closes on the lack of unity between the House and the U.S. Senate. One top investment bank's analyst, SAC, noted further share drops seem probable at this point. Bottom line, on U.S. equities. Well, our favorite seven-indicator greed to fear index finally pulled back into neutral territory. So now we have room to continue the bull move. And there were some signs of overselling in the charts this week. I continue to hold to my Dow Jones target of around 24,000. And again, another quick reminder, this weekend alone, you get a free Ledger wallet. It's actually shipped the day you place an order for a one-year subscription to our Alpha Stocks Bitcoin newsletter. So don't miss out on this opportunity limited to this weekend. Coming up after the break, more Gold Seeker. Great to be back with you in this week's question and answer segment, Q&A. First up, longtime listener John in California.
Yeah, Chris, just a question about the upcoming fork in Bitcoin. All of my Bitcoin are already stored on a Trezor cold storage wallet hardware device. So how do I get, how do people who already have their Bitcoins on a device, a cold storage wallet, how do they get credit for those new tokens that are going to come into being once the fork takes place? I'm just curious about that. It's not clear from the instructions from the Alpha Stocks newsletter about exactly how this is all going to take place. If your Bitcoins are in a cold storage wallet, off, not online, I can't see how they're going to be credited. But anyway, if you can shed any light on that, I appreciate it. Thanks.
Hi, John. This is really the big question, isn't it? We have an upcoming fork, and for newbies here, which really aren't we all newbies? Maybe in the kingdom of the newbie, the slightly more informed newbie is king. But this SegWit 2X, as we're calling it, I like to call it B2X for Bitcoin 2X, it essentially is a segregated witness. That's what SegWit stands for. And there will be some really serious coding changes to the Bitcoin platform. This, as you might expect, will require a splitting of the blockchain into the legacy BTC, which is what we think of BTC now, and this new SegWit 2X. Now, the 2X stands for a doubling of the block size. And really, there's an awful lot of debate by folks with a lot of knowledge as to whether or not increasing or even decreasing the block size will improve. In reality, we'll likely still see higher fees eventually and longer wait times and things of that nature. And that's why I think Roger Ver, if you're familiar with him, he's some people refer to him as the Bitcoin Jesus, but he was one of the folks to really get on top of Bitcoin early. He made probably several hundred million now, and he's quite the evangelist of Bitcoin. What the Bitcoin developers are failing to recognize here is that Bitcoin will eventually be eclipsed by faster, less expensive, and more nimble Bitcoin substitutes as a currency. And here's an example. Litecoin and others such as Monero and maybe not ETH, which is really more of a contract-based coin that's script. What Bitcoin developers might be missing, he points out, is look, we should be focusing on lowering costs, increasing the speed of transactions. He switched, diversified into Bitcoin Cash and made, I bet, doubled his fortune because shortly after he got on that train, and he's still there, Bitcoin Cash just exploded in price. And I think there is potential for a lot of people to wake up to this because he was an early adopter. You might say the earliest, other than maybe Satoshi. Forget that. Cut that out. What does this mean for listeners today? When our calendar, our countdown calendar, in and around that date, you will essentially have a snapshot of all of your bitcoins. And then if you have prepared properly, you will have as many bitcoins as you had before, but then another set of identical number of SegWit2x. These are represent the new blockchain. I have in my hand, and I've been distributing to some of my top folks, just frankly friends of the show, sending them numerous wallets this week, just as gifts or as promotions and things. A very special wallet that my subscribers know about and some have actually received from us here at GoldSeek. And this very inexpensive wallet will just automatically pretty much split your Bitcoin from your SegWit, okay, on around November, let's say 14th or 15th. But there is a catch. There is, of course, the risk of replay attacks. Now, what is a replay attack? Gee, more jargon, more terminology. Let's keep it simple. You go to spend either some of your new SegWit or your original Bitcoin. There is essentially a double spending issue or a potential for an attack, a return attack. And this can be mitigated, but it is tricky. So I'm going to try to tell people, don't do anything. Make sure you have your Bitcoin and your SegWit in cold storage. If it's in cold storage and you have the private keys, make sure you print those out and hide it. You want to have your private keys. 99.9% chance you'll be fine, as long as you don't transact a day or two before, preferably several days after the snapshot of this month. So just keep it in limbo. That is your surefire way to get your SegWit and retain your Bitcoin without any fear of these dreaded replay attacks. But then there's a catch. Many folks expect that the forking of the SegWit will, of course, collapse in price. This may or may not happen, but it has happened following the earlier two splits or forks. Think of the conundrum you're facing. Oh, you'll be just fine if you do nothing. Oh, you'll lose everything if you do nothing. It's an ambiguity. That's what I'm trying to help people who are just saying, look, I want to be able to sell either my Bitcoin or my SegWit because the Bitcoin will be sans about an 18 to 20% dividend on that day. We all know what happens to stocks when they're sans dividend, past the dividend date, right? They have to adjust their price downward in almost every instance. And then you have the SegWit, which typically loses 60 to 85%. In the minutes, hours, days, and weeks following the fork. You're faced with a conundrum. For folks who are not investment-minded, which I recommend for the Bitcoin following this event, and I think the SegWit should too, so I'm planning to liquidate, go to cash, go to USDT Tether, okay, and wait to buy everything back on the cheap. They don't want to just sit on their cash. So here is the only close to surefire way I found, and I received this from the 10X developer who, I don't know, probably just made about $80 million on his ICO. For folks who don't know 10X, it just facilitates iPhone transactions. Pretty exciting stuff. Here's what you do, as I understand it. You want to have your current Bitcoin on a SegWit-supported cold storage like Ledger, Trezor, or something along those lines. In other words, off the exchanges, which you don't want to leave them on most of the time anyway, by the way, and keep those private keys. The moment the snapshot occurs, you'll know because as you look at your SegWit2x chain on that wallet, they will show up, and it'll almost certainly be the number that you had before. You still risk replay at this point, assuming they haven't implemented, meaning the SegWit developers, Jeff Garzik, he's the only developer, as I understand right now, of the chain. But assuming they haven't implemented replay protection, which we believe they may not, then you are at risk of losing some or all of your Bitcoin and SegWit. So what do you do? Well, according to this developer, you simply take a tiny amount, let's say 0.0001, Bitcoin, you purchase that on an exchange and send it over to your cold storage, just the Bitcoin. If and only if your Bitcoin balance, let's say it was 1, now shows 0.001, and your SegWit, though, shows 1, then you have almost certainly split your coins. But if the SegWit reflects the same, it's a mirror image of your Bitcoin, you have not split your coins, and you'll want to keep repeating the transaction until they're split. Now, he did suggest another step, and that was that after this point, you would then send your Bitcoin to another new account that's never had Bitcoin in it before. At that point, it's fully split, because you have two different balances, and you've sent off the Bitcoin or the SegWit to an unused account where there is absolutely no balance and there never has been a balance. Okay, people are probably shaking their heads. I'm not terribly pleased about it. But if you are just desperate, let's assume you have 10 Bitcoin and you're about to have 10 SegWit and it's about a 25% dividend and you're convinced it's going to drop 50, 60, 70, 80, 90% in hours and the days ahead, you don't want to wait. You know, you have an enormous sum at risk, chances of losing all of that dividend. You're not long-term oriented on your SegWit like you are your Bitcoin. You'll want to make sure they're split first. And I hope that helps some people. And I know there will be more folks listening to me who are more knowledgeable on the subject, and they'll likely send in additional tips. But right now, we have all the details listed for our Alpha Stocks newsletter subscribers who always get the information first. Okay, so John, I hope that helped. I can just hear you pounding the table, tossing the beverage across the room. If you have any specific questions, anyone at all, gsr@hughes.net, drop me a line. Opening up the mailbag here for digital questions and comments. First up, okay, Brian is interested in gold, and he says that China has probably amassed an enormous sum, which we're only starting to find out now, that they have enormous reserves in the ground, which they're claiming eclipses that of the United States. But remember, it hasn't been mined yet, and that's kind of the fly in the ointment. But nevertheless, you know, they retain all their gold. It's not shipped off, so it's theirs. They just have to procure it. So he's convinced that there are drums of war with North Korea, and China is on the sidelines, and we have an administration who seems to be at odds with both parties, and what a great time to own gold and silver. Well, you know, I agree with you, Brian, but I disagree with you somewhat. I'd say every time is a great time to own gold and silver, because eventually we're waiting for that Bitcoin moment when the blockchain keeps picking up on gold and silver, and there just is none to find, because guess what? It's big on transparency, is it? Next, Chris, longtime subscriber, been listening to the show for a while, and he really enjoyed Jim Rickards and Bob Hoy. Well, listen, we appreciate that, listener, and wish you the best. It's Daniel, a truly long-time listener. It's got to be close to 12 years. He says, hope you're doing fantastically. He'd like to know the name of the Elliott Wave guy mentioned in London. Daniel, I don't even have his direct name, but here, let me give it for everybody. So just send over a request to anyone who wants the Elliott Wave analyst who's done so well, and I'll fire it over to you. Then another longtime listener, Ken, friend of the show, says he enjoys it tremendously, and he mentions several of his favorite tokens. He also mentions that Cliff High, one of our favorites here, expects for Litecoin to hit triple digits. Oh, absolutely. You know, I agree with both of you on that one. Oh, and then the Hedge ICO, which tumbles. Yes, you know it has. I haven't recommended it until about now. It hit 0.0018 today, which is nearly 80-85% off the ICO. I think we're probably close to a bottom there, and I picked up a small position, ticker HDG, and it's on, of course, HIT BTC for our listeners who are interested. I also like ICX, that's the Icon ICO, which can, as you know, at least 50% rally from my entry point, and it looks like it might have another entry here. Okay, on that note, I want to thank everybody for sending in their questions and comments. I just don't have time to get to everybody today, but if you'd like to talk to us, we would like to hear your questions and comments. And the best thing to do is call in. You can do so 24/7. You can call us. Remember, it's not toll-free, but we'd love to field your questions and comments. You can call in 641-715-3900. The extension number is 5900. 5140.49, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 641-715-3900. Maybe you'd like to talk about cryptos, maybe precious metals. Maybe you'd like to just tell me how little the host really knows. 641-715-3900. 5140.49. Just record and leave your question as many times or as much as you'd like. Coming up after the break, more Gold Seek. John Scursi, partner and portfolio manager, founder of Corona Associates. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Chris. It is a pleasure to be back.
I don't know that we've ever had a guest return so quickly. You were gracious enough to re-record this episode as we had a studio glitch. We lost the entire previous nearly 45-minute recording just as it was wrapping up. So let's jump right into crypto space. I mean, you're obviously watching it closely. You have one eye, wary eye, on an even skeptical eye on the Bitcoin phenomenon. This is really the topic du jour. Tell us more, please.
You know, I think that it is something that is here to stay. And I believe that people need to look at it in terms of the fact that it has two components. You know, one is, what is this particular coin or asset worth as a store of value, for example? And what is the concept of it all about in terms of the blockchain capability? And I think what I am intrigued about this whole thing and convinced about is that that particular software platform known as blockchain is truly innovative and truly something that has an important role to play out and is likely to be here to stay. And the question I have in my own mind, which is still unresolved, is how much do you pay for that? And how will this evolve? In the sense that just because you are first in this space and you have pioneered, you know, the concept, is the concept going to morph from where it is now, or is it going to, you know, just continue to gain traction? And there are certain things about Bitcoin that I do not like, which is primarily the ownership characteristic. And by that I mean, there are a few Bitcoin holders that own the lion's share of the value of all Bitcoin. And I believe if one article that I read recently is accurate, it stated that 4% of the Bitcoin holders actually control or own 90% of the Bitcoin value or market cap. That would mean that there are a small group of people that are literally Bitcoin billionaires. To my way of thinking, they are unlikely to be people that are still buying it. They might be mining it, but I doubt that they're still buying it. They are very likely to be selling it. And if they're selling it, they outnumber or can outnumber the people that are coming in. And the people that are coming in, Coinbase, which is one of the largest, if not the largest, exchange for these cryptos, had actually registered something like, if I'm correct in my memory, 100,000 new users. So that's a lot of new people, probably bringing in a lot of money. And where is the Bitcoin coming from? And we know that mining these new things is very difficult, very energy intensive. It is likely coming from people that already own it, and there are a few people that own a lot of these things. I am wondering myself, in terms of the ownership base, if that is not a very unstable ownership structure, where you have a few people who own a lot at a very low cost basis, and a whole bunch of brand new people that I think are drawn not so much by their great understanding of what this is. I'm sure there are some people that have a much greater understanding of what it is compared to me, for example. But there are probably people that are coming in just because they see a rising price and they can't stand it anymore. They don't need to know anything more than that. That's one of the things that I've learned as an investor, Chris, is that nothing drives the demand for something more than a rising price. So that will be a very seductive thing to certain kinds of people. And we saw that phenomenon, during the dot-com era. And we may be seeing the same phenomenon with Bitcoin, right now. But having said that, I do think that the blockchain innovation is something that is here to stay. I wonder myself whether or not it can be morphed into blockchain cryptocurrency that is denominated in a fiat currency like the dollar in terms of a government-sponsored crypto, where cryptocurrency doesn't have to change in price day to day from supply and demand because, the thing is actually denominated, in a currency that you and I already have in our wallets. That may be, something to consider. And how much does the government want to get involved? Another intriguing thing I read not too long ago, and if I'm remembering it correctly, it was an article that basically said that I believe in the 2015 tax year, the IRS had indicated something like only 44 people had included a Bitcoin transaction on their tax return. You can be sure that the IRS is going to look at this, and whether they can look at it, whether they're just going to go on trust or something, it's a pretty difficult thing for governments to keep an eye on. It's not possible, but it is certainly a very difficult thing to do. And what will their response be? And maybe their response is a non-response, that they can't do anything.
First, let's address the idea of denominating cryptocurrencies in a fiat money. Well, that defeats the entire purpose of the crypto money. You see, there's a 21 million, as you know, supply of Bitcoin. They'll be fully mined by roughly 2040. And within that time, of course, there's a limited supply. Whereas the U.S. dollar has been, as you know, I'm sure, and our listeners know, inflated away roughly 98% from around 1913, worth about 2 pennies. Whereas Bitcoin, because it is, of course, unregulated for the most part, difficult to regulate, similar to email, as we discussed before the show, it had amazing number of non-believers and skeptics. And today, very few people are not texting or sending emails, even our officials, one near the top of the food chain, you might even say. What may be in the near term, the most important point that folks can take away from this discussion, and that is the parabolic nature of the recent move. We believe that is a direct result of the SegWit or segregated witness, where they're increasing the block size by twofold, and of course the fork amounts to a splitting of the blockchain into SegWit 2 and the original legacy Bitcoin. Of course, this amounts to essentially a 20-30% dividend, carrying such a large that will be paid out roughly November 15th or 16th, depending on the blockchain state at that time. You, of course, are carrying an incredible amount of value, which is a self-fulfilling prophecy in a bullish trajectory. Can't help but agree with you. This market is rife for a minimum 40-50% decline. But if I were to guess, we'll see a 30-50% decline in the next few weeks to months.
I just think that it is worthy of people to spend the time to understand what it is and come up with their own conclusions. The parabolic nature of it, I think we underscores the fact that there are human beings that are driving this market, and so they are going to be subject to the reactions of human beings and the emotions of human beings. If there really is something of value here long-term in terms of adoption and longevity and so on, it's worthwhile learning about this, forming an opinion on it. You may decide that it's, good or bad, or something you want to get involved with or not and get involved with. But because of that parabolic rise, don't be surprised if it has some kind of major reaction. And like you point out, it could be 40 or 50% or even more, which might create an opportunity. And, you know, and then it proceeds from there. When you have a situation where a lot of people are coming in, you know, you have to ask yourself, how will they react? Some of those people came in just because it seems to be rising every day. How are they going to react at the first sign of some kind of price decline? And that's also, you know, the problem I have with the equity market. You know, I've never known in my career an equity market that went up every day. You know, good news, bad news, it goes up every day. And I have to question, who are people that are buying this? And what is their risk profile like? And how tested are they when they witness a market decline? Are they going to buy more? Do they have the intellectual and emotional courage to sit with what they did in terms of having bought the top? Or are they going to feel compelled to sell? And if they are going to sell, who are they going to sell to? And at what price are they going to sell? So, you know, we have all the characteristics of a very unstable ownership structure in a lot of these markets, whether it's Bitcoin or whether it's the equity market. And so, you know, to get back to what I had intimated before, we're in a crash-prone environment for many assets.
We talked earlier about how Bitcoin, storage for Bitcoin in Switzerland, a vault there. Of course, they hide it under the gold vault. You brought up some interesting parallels between Bitcoin and gold. With the price of Bitcoin now approaching, let's just say sixfold the price of gold, if you were an early adopter, an early entrant, a believer early on, and you have, let's say, 10x'd on your Bitcoin, what a remarkable opportunity you may have to lock in a portion of those profits at least and procure yellow metal at a relative valuation discount.
You know, I couldn't agree more, but you're speaking to somebody who's been a believer of that concept for a long time and has not been rewarded for that particular belief. I consider gold, when it is compared to many of these other things, to be the unbubble, and the reason is that it is so unloved, it is so underowned, it is so underpriced. I read an article recently which had done some interesting math, which was essentially that if you adjusted the 1980 high on the price of gold for the real rate of inflation since 1980, today it would be priced at over 15,000. That may seem remarkable because you and I know what the price we've seen going across the screen has been recently, but it shouldn't be that remarkable when you consider that the Dow, for example, is up at least the same multiple as its level from 1980. I believe that number is approximately 25 times. If you took this price of gold times 25, you start to see a number that is higher than that 15,000 number. So I can't think of anything, Chris, that hasn't gone up significantly just from inflation. You know, even a can of pork and beans has gone up a lot more than its 1980 price.
You talk about a $15,000 adjustment from 1980, but, you know, the multiple is around 2.6-fold. So if we were to take gold price since then, let's say it was a peak of 800, and we multiply, it's just in the neighborhood of 2,000, not 15,000. Do you suppose they're using a different inflation multiple? And can you back it up? Can you give us any idea what they're looking at?
I do not know what that inflation multiple is. It is obviously different from the official rate, but I believe that it is a well-known fact that since 1980, we have changed the way that the inflation rate is computed. You know, that whole area of statistics known as hedonics, you know, in terms of what the government has done with these statistics, they have been heavily massaged and altered in the time frame to suit, you know, the narrative of the government that wants you to believe that, you know, things like employment or inflation are really not that bad. But if you believe the work in someone like John Williams, who has a very clear-thinking website called shadowstats.com, where he, as an economist, deconstructs the official government data using the methodology of computing that data along the lines of what it was in 1980, he comes up with very different numbers for things like inflation and unemployment. And I know for a fact that he considers the present rate of inflation something closer to 9 or 10% than it is to the official 2% number that we've been hearing about ad nauseum. So I think the difference is how you look at what is the real inflation rate. And I don't know if it's as high as he says it is. I respect his work, but I also know that it is not, as an individual who buys things, I know it is not as low as what the government says it is. So either way, I think that you come away with the notion, the credible notion, that the price of gold that we see today is very understated in relation to what has happened to our money and the value of our money through inflation since 1980. So in terms of making that trade that you described, I would endorse that wholeheartedly. The other reason that, you know, I think, and it's important for people to appreciate this point, which is the other reason to own gold, besides the fact that it's under-owned, it's cheap, and it's undervalued, is the fact that it happens to be the reserve asset that is owned by central banks. And at the end of the day, it's not so much, you know, what you and I think, it's what they think that matters, because they are the ones in the driver's seat when it comes to formulating monetary policy and devising our monetary future, either, you know, correctly or incorrectly. They're the ones that, you know, it's not a democratic institution. They're the ones that decide that outcome. And as long as they are owning gold, there is a very real possibility that they deal with their very real debt problem by changing the value of the asset that they happen to be very long, which is physical gold. And if history is any guide, periods of monetary change or reset or whatever you want to use as the term has been accompanied by changes in the price or value of gold in relation to fiat money in which the debt is denominated. And one of the things that I always come back to when having, you know, the debates about whether things are good or bad, money is worth this or that, I always come back to one thing, Chris, which is, number one, our money, which we use every day, is debt-based money. Number two, there is a lot of debt in the world. There is a lot more debt since 2008, almost, depending on how you look at it, somewhere between 50% more debt and 100% more debt. The debt problem that we had in 2008 did not go away. It got bigger, Chris. And I am still waiting for one person to show me on one piece of paper using math that I can understand, let alone the kind of math that Bitcoin code developer can understand, but the kind of math I can understand. Please show me how this debt, one way it can be paid, and I would say the only way it can be paid, is by devaluing the money in which that debt is denominated. You know, one of the parts of the story in Bitcoin is the fact that people are looking for an alternative type of money, an alternative store of value. you know, whether they have correctly turned to Bitcoin as the alternative, that will be demonstrated in this. But gold does have a test of time that you need to look at and respect, because very few, if any, other assets can hold a record like physical gold can in that regard in terms of time. And it gets back to that other point, you know, whether all of us need to look at it simply because the central banks own it. That's what they use as their store of value. They don't use silver. They don't use Bitcoin. They may in the future, but right now they use gold. And so that's the reason why, as an investor, you need to know what gold is. You need to know what gold does and why it is what it is. It could be something that could be the solution to our debt problem. And if that's the case, you know, it has a long way to go.
Gold is the hallmark. It's sound money. It's real money. It is the core, the base, the foundation of the portfolio. Whereas the Bitcoin phenomenon, which we believe, and I'd like to address that next, has still possibly further to go, should be viewed as either a component of that portfolio, the core base of gold, silver, and shares. Also, it has a very speculative component until it has reputation and experience and history as real money that, as you say, central banks hold in their vaults. Moving on, I'd like to address your concerns about such a small number of holders, roughly 4%, own the bulk of Bitcoins. And it's ironic that we could turn this equation around. You would likely find less than 1% of the population of the world, probably a fraction of that 1%, owns the bulk of fiat money and related assets on that, let's call it fiat money blockchain, i.e. stocks, bonds, real estate, and precious metal. Secondly, I'd like to note that less than 1% of the world currently have any Bitcoin whatsoever exposure or a wallet. We talked about this earlier, Metcalfe's Law, which shows you simply take the square of the number of users in a network, which, of course, blockchain is de facto a network, and multiply that by the daily transactions. Well, you get an exponential increase in valuation of Bitcoin or of the network with a very small increase in the number of users. And current growth estimates indicate that we could see doubling of the number of users in Bitcoin for many years. When you double that and put it on an exponential chart, it really bodes well, at least hypothetically, for the price of Bitcoin. Can you address these points I've just brought up in the context of your 4% holders of Bitcoin?
You know, I think you raise a very good point. You know, not only do these 4% people own the bulk of these Bitcoins, but their cost basis is probably de minimis in relation to the price that we're seeing. You know, at the end of the day, I think you still have, you know, human beings as your actors in these markets, and there is an important speculative, you know, aspect to anything that has had the kind of trajectory of this. But, you know, you raise a very good point that there are very few people that own the very bulk of financial assets, of fiat currency, and so on. The one difference may be what their respective cost basis may be. If a pension fund, for example, is one of those few holders, their cost is not zero on those that they have. The other aspect is, of course, you know, what is the component to what determines, you know, the asset value of things like financial assets. And they are tied to debt. So if we had an environment where interest rates increase, you're going to see the value of those financial assets go down. Will it bring down the price of Bitcoin? Will it be subject to the same kind of tidal wave of liquidity, either moving in or moving out? My takeaway, you know, to people right now is that everything is in a state of major flux, and we cannot lose sight of the fact that the world as we see it right now, the financial markets as we see them right now, the prices that we see right now, do not ignore the fact or lose track of the fact that we are resting on a tidal wave of 8 years of cumulative liquidity additions to the world that were completely spun out of the machinations of the central banks, rightly or wrongly. This was not a natural phenomenon. And for the very first time in 8 years, we have begun to take steps to withdraw that tsunami of liquidity. So this is a time where all of us need to examine what we are doing, why we are doing it, and what we're paying for these things. You know, we blithely go from day to day thinking that today is going to be a lot like yesterday and a lot like the day before. And sometimes we forget, you know, that all of this was different because of what happened in 2008. We had to apply this enormously huge liquidity intervention, which was born out of a circumstance of emergency because our very global financial system was in a state of sudden death. And certain big players were taken out in a box. Lehman Brothers, Bear Stearns, same thing. Merrill Lynch, de facto the same thing.
Oh, sure. AIG, the nation's largest insurer, would have evaporated were it not for the bailout. General Motors.
And what has happened last month took a baby step to prove the narrative that everything was okay. Everything was okay.
Read a brilliant article late last night. The West Coast is experiencing, you may have read, a homelessness epidemic. A huge component of this story is that folks have simply been priced out of their homes because of the inflation you've referred to, the asset bubble narrative. Some of the folks who were interviewed in these deplorable tent cities are Hoover shacks, I think they used to call them in the 20s and 30s, but were folks who were working 9-to-5 jobs but couldn't even afford basic living, a basic apartment or a mortgage on the smallest home amid this inflation that we've talked about today. We talked earlier about the St. Louis Fed's M1 number, and you juxtapose that chart with the S&P 500, the correlation is close to 1-to-1, i.e., the Fed and their compadres may just be culpable for this 8-to-9-year bull market in shares. You would prefer to see people locking in at least some of those stocks, bonds, and look for better valuations in undervalued assets, such as the precious metals.
I mean, I consider gold the unbubble asset. You know, it's the one most important asset. You know, there are people that would argue it is the most important asset when it comes to being a store of value because it has a test of time that can demonstrate it can convey value indefinitely into the future. It also does so without being a debt instrument, meaning it does not have a counterparty problem. It does not have a credit issue with it. And there are just so many things, as you point out, you know, that would be inconsistent with the concept that, you know, that we are supposed to accept that everything is okay. You know, as you point out, the, you know, how is it that you can see, you know, this kind of homelessness if things are okay, you know, and so many other things. How can all these retailers be going out of business when the economy is supposedly 70% consumer driven and yet retailers are going out of business? Yes, I understand that Amazon has been a game changer in that space, but it's not the sole explanation. You know, the state of health of the consumer is something, in my opinion, that is less than robust. So, you know, I question this concept that everything is okay. Another thing that I would point out is this everything okay economy comes with a deficit spending package on the part of the United States government, which is virtually unprecedented. And again, we have gotten used to it, that somehow spending, the government spending an extra $1 trillion per annum is okay. Well, here's the question I would ask someone to think about. what would our economy today in the United States look like if the government didn't spend an extra $1 trillion? Would everything still be okay?
It's the key question. John Scursi, wealth of knowledge, as usual, for investors. Take a look at your portfolios. What's overvalued? Where is the deficit? If the deficit is gold, silver, related assets, why not lock in, book some profits, position your portfolio for the next bull market? Think about the return of your capital over the return on your capital. John Scursi, more information, please, on Corona Associates Capital Management, LLC. Any contact information?
Anyone that wants to learn about what we are doing, Chris, can go to our website, www.coronacap.com. We've got a lot of info on there, and there are phone numbers for anyone that wants to contact us, you know, find out more about what we do, and we always welcome any and all new inquiries from people.
We just can't thank you enough for your time and being so gracious as to re-record. Not many people have the intestinal fortitude nor the wherewithal to sustain two back-to-back interviews. Again, John Scursi, thank you so much. Let's hopefully have you back as soon as possible with the latest topicality and all of your insights.
Chris, it has been a real pleasure.
With stocks hitting new highs, the next sector to fly could be the precious metals. GoldSeek's top industry analyst just uncovered another solid gold opportunity, Silvercorp Metals. Silvercorp's key property is located in China, the largest gold producer in the world. Silvercorp's net income is soaring, up 589%. Production eclipsed guidance by 27.5%, totaling 6.5 million ounces. Mining operations are literally printing silver at only $3.82 per ounce. AISC net byproducts credits for the fiscal year 2017. Sales increased 51% year over year, and cash flow from operations more than doubled to $80 million. Silvercorp continues to set the industry standard with reduced costs, equity appreciation, a solid dividend, and improved free cash flow. Silvercorp is uniquely positioned to capitalize on rising silver, lead, and zinc prices. To learn more about the exceptional opportunity in Silvercorp Inc., direct your web browser to silvercorpmetals.com, ticker symbol SVM in the U.S. and Canada. Remember to treat your portfolio with a core position in Silvercorp Metals.
GoldSeek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.
All right, it's just a pleasure to welcome Top Trends researcher and publisher of the Trends Journal. With the top trends impacting the economy and the geopolitical arena and even the Bitcoin blockchain phenomenon, which a lot of folks are getting excited about. Welcome back, Gerald Celente.
Well, thank you, Chris.
You seem to agree with us. Obviously, Bitcoin and related altcoins may have legs. You talked about interest in Ethereum, interest in Bitcoin Cash. We like those as well. Dash is another. And, of course, Litecoin, we think, will be a three-digit coin, Ethereum a four-digit coin in the coming months and years ahead. Give us an idea of what you see, please.
The world is going cashless. Now, you go to China, nobody's using credit cards or cash. That's your app. You're buying everything. And so there's no more in God we trust. People are not connected to their currency. So cryptocurrencies are being looked at as an alternative currency in the sense also that it's also going to become, as we're forecasting, we just sent out a trend alert, it's going to be looked upon as a safe haven asset, particularly in times of geopolitical and economic unrest. And that's really, people forget when Bitcoin really took its real big jump was back in 2016. And that's when the Chinese were buying most of the market. At that time, over 80% of the dealings were coming out of China. Why? Well, the Chinese yuan, their currency, was crashing. And so were their equity markets. They were going through all kinds of turmoil. And you have a country with, what, 1.3 billion people? Here in the United States, we're the 0.3 billion. You know, 300 million we have here, and they have 1.3 billion. So people are watching their value of their currency decline. You can't buy what you used to. So they are the ones that went into really the cryptocurrencies bigger than anybody else, and it's a bigger country than just about anybody else. Them and India tied about with 1.3 billion people. So that's what we're looking at. And then go and mention India. Look what happened. Just a year from Election Day, November 8th, 2016, they called in 96% of the currency under the guise that people were beating taxes and there was a lot of money out there, and it wasn't true at all. And they had to bring it back into the bank. 99% of it went back in. But what happened? All of a sudden, people are buying things on apps. So it's, again, a cashless society. So in a cashless society, there's room for cryptocurrencies, because whose cash is cash? It's all digital cash. So why not go with a digital cash that has more substance to it rather than a central bank printing up all the digital money backed by nothing and printed on nothing? So that's why we see the future of cryptocurrencies being a long-term investment strategy. And again, we don't give investment advice. I want to make that really clear. We're trend forecasters. And also, when you see groups like the CME Group, and they're going to be offering Bitcoin on their futures exchange at the beginning of the year, you saw 100,000 people jump into the Bitcoin market following that announcement, and the price spiking into the mid-7,000s. You know, went up over $1,000. So there's a lot of interest, and that's very important, by the way, what I just said. I began buying gold in the late 1970s. My first buy was 187. Bought it also. I was a young guy. You know, I didn't know what I was doing. And I bought it at the highest point of the trading day. I believe it was January 20th, 1980. It was $875, closed about $850. The next morning I woke up, and I lost about, $150,000. I parlayed a $5,000 bet into nearly $750,000. Anyway, I didn't get out in time. What I'm trying to say is that when heavy speculation starts going into these markets, and particularly now with the futures trading, they're only there to trade. They're not there to invest. So people, we're not telling people what to do, but you're going to start seeing spikes that may not be substantiated by factors. And I'm just going back to what happened with gold back in the day, and it took a long time for that to recover. So when you have speculators going worldwide on it, rather than people buying it because they believe in it as an investment and security strategy, there are different dynamics that take place that we would consider people looking at closely.
I think it's a great point. You know, we've seen a parabolic climb in Bitcoin. As you pointed out, the CME Group agreed by the end of this year to have a Bitcoin contract traded. I believe it's a futures contract. That, of course, huge for the Bitcoin space. At the same time, I'm a bit ambiguous because I worry a little bit about manipulation. Big players may be trying to stifle or contain the Bitcoin contagion. But at the same time, you know, if we look at Metcalfe's law, my listener is probably yawning now because I've mentioned it a lot, but it's really a basic little formula that's where you just take the number of users in any network, which Bitcoin obviously a network, you square it. Okay, so there's your exponential component, and multiply that by the daily transactions. All the information is easily found online. But when we do that and we project it forward and realize there's only 1% currently in Europe, Asia, and the United States, around the world even, less than 1% that have a Bitcoin wallet, what if we go to 2%, 3%, or even 5%, 50% of America or Europe or Asia? When you start to crunch the numbers, you begin to see 500,000 as a low ball estimate on Bitcoin. Now, in reality, you'd probably agree the powers that be are never going to let that happen. Long before we see, million-dollar Bitcoin, I'm sure it'll be regulated. Some other currency by then maybe will emerge as the dominant player, like Litecoin or Monero or something, Dash, as you mentioned, or Ethereum, and one of any of the other 10,000 coins. Keep in mind that this should just be a component, a speculative component of your portfolio.
You mentioned about governments. And what happened in China, from being over 80% in the market, now it's down to 5% because the Chinese put regulations on it and stopped a lot of Bitcoin trading. So those are the things to be concerned
about. But then I would counter with Japan, of course, embracing it with open arms. Remember, they have that $4 trillion in pension funds there.
And now as we're seeing unrest going on in the Middle East, you know, we're telling our subscribers when we do our trend forecast that we just did with the Saudis basically declaring war against Iran and Lebanon, and we're saying that they declared war against them, which is totally untrue. But we've been saying, and I probably said on your show, for well over a year, watch Iran. That's who they're going to start a war with, and that's what's going to happen as it's moving in that direction. So what we're saying now, and we're telling our subscribers, cryptocurrency and gold are going to be looked upon as the safe haven assets. But look at the people that are against it. You hear Jamie Dimon calling it a fraud. I mean, the banksters should know what a fraud is. The reason he's calling it a fraud is that cryptocurrencies basically make banking useless. And that's why they hate it so much. And what it's doing, it's destabilizing the power of the central banksters. So that's why they're against it so vehemently. But again, it's global. And we don't see it stopping. And as I said, my generation was gold. The millennial generation is cryptocurrency. And in time of economic and geopolitical unrest, people are going to go into both cryptocurrency and gold as that's the way we're forecasting it.
Couldn't agree more. We see a confluence of gold and the blockchain. Expect to see more and more assets monetized and, of course, tied to the blockchain, and in particular, gold and silver. That trend is catching fire. It opens up a whole new world of transparent buying, selling, lending without requiring some vault under 50 feet of earth. You know, you don't have some tungsten-filled bars. It's visible for everyone on the blockchain from any location and verified throughout all the nodes. While we've gone very parabolic here, would I advise newcomers put large sums into, you know, the high flyers right now? Absolutely not. Maybe dollar cost average over 6 to 12 months into this, into gold, into silver, and into the cryptos. But I would highly advise people stick to the big names that Gerald and I have outlined here today. Don't go too far on the fringe. You really want to stick with the big names that are verified. They have well-known developers, and they have the infrastructure and the robust foundation that supports the operations.
Well, again, we don't give financial advice, you know, so... And we're just saying what we see going on. And again, on the bigger picture, what's on our radar right now the most is what's going on in the Middle East. And you have this Saudi prince, and he's 32 years old. The crown prince. What crown prince? What did the princess kiss a frog, and the frog became a prince? I'm tired of this baloney. I mean, it's a gang over there. And if they just had a palace coup, or I should say purge, not a coup, and they're under the guise of anti-corruption. This is the guy that started the Yemen war, that the Yemenis did nothing to Saudi Arabia. All they wanted to do is reinstall their flack as president, the other people that overthrew the Houthis, and it's none of their business. And by the way, the guy that they threw out, he was never elected. He was just put in there after the other guy was thrown out. So they've killed over 10,000 people there. They've destroyed the poorest nation in the Middle East. They have a cholera epidemic going on. And there is a humanitarian crisis. That's not in the news at all. So now this crown prince is declaring that Lebanon has declared war against them and that Iran has declared war against them. He's been meeting with him reportedly three times, the last time in late October with the crown prince. The crown prince has also been in Israel, according to reports. And you know the conflict between Israel and Iran. You remember Netanyahu building that painting of his in the UN a number of years ago, the cartoon bomb with a fuse on it, saying the nuclear bomb that Iran had was ready to explode. So you see the tensions going on over there. And I'm going back to the war that Saudi started, this crown prince rather, because now Saudi Arabia is selling bonds They never had to before. They need money. Oil has to be at $100 a barrel for the Saudi government to break even. And now, of course, since this conflict has heated up, it's at a 2.5-year high, oil, at around $64 a barrel. So there's a lot going on here. And it's going to be, and we're seeing it in the gold market as well, responding. And gold still trading in that 1260, 1280 range, and it's pretty solid. So this could be a breakout point if this war breaks out, because the war drums are beating very loudly. Trump is really, really on the side of Saudi Arabia. And again, you know, this is the country that started along with the other Arab League and Obama and Hillary Clinton, Samantha Power and Susan Rice, the overthrow of Gaddafi, Sarkozy and Cameron, France and England. Back in 2011, that's destabilized the entire area. And if you go back to May of 2015, I think it was May, yeah, that you would listen to Obama saying that Russia was in a quagmire, by getting involved in, it was earlier than that actually, 2015, that, would be involved in a quagmire in if they got involved in Syria. And the exact opposite has happened. The Syrian government has gained more and more against the ISIS rebels, the ones supported by Saudi Arabia. And so Saudi Arabia is losing over there. Iran is winning. And this is a war that's been going on since basically when the Sunnis and the Shia started fighting against each other, and nothing has really changed since then. So this is really a big one that we would suggest people have on their radar, and most particularly to know the facts. And you were talking about the media before. All they're going to do is throw out buzzwords that will put people on one side or another without knowing the facts. So again, we're being taught to hate Iran, but people don't know what happened in 1953 as the CIA and the MI6 to the UK overthrew the very popular, democratically elected government of Mossadegh when he nationalized the oil fields and basically threw out Anglo-Iranian Oil, better known as BP, and Standard Oil, better known as ExxonMobil, incident in Iran when they overthrew the Shah and overtook the United States Embassy. But they don't know what led up to it. So what we're saying to people is really know the facts and don't buy the BS by the prostitutes, because they're just selling agendas.
Gerald Celente, just tell people more about the Trends Journal and how they can procure a copy, please.
Yes, trendsresearch.com, trendsresearch.com. And again, we put out trend alerts, trend monthly, do trends in the news broadcasts during the week. And it's the only place where you'll read history before it happens. And again, what you were saying about cryptocurrencies, and you know, we've been right on that as well. Not the first ones on it, but on it in a manner that we're looking at it very differently than most are. And you're right, people my age and my generation, most of them don't even know what a cryptocurrency is.
It's so well said. Sage advice as always. Gerald Celente, thank you.
All the best. Good luck.
With stocks hitting new highs, the next sector to fly could be the precious metals. GoldSeek's top industry analyst just uncovered another solid gold opportunity, Silvercorp Metals. Silvercorp's key property is located in China, the largest gold producer in the world. Silvercorp's net income is soaring, up 589%. Production eclipsed guidance by 27.5%, totaling 6.5 million ounces. Mining operations are literally printing silver at only $3.82 per ounce. AISC net byproducts credits for the fiscal year 2017. Sales increased 51% year over year, and cash flow from
operations more than doubled to $80 million. Silvercorp continues to set the industry standard with reduced costs, equity appreciation, a solid dividend, and improved free cash flow. Silvercorp is uniquely positioned to capitalize on rising silver, lead, and zinc prices. To learn more about the exceptional opportunity in Silvercorp, Inc., direct your web browser to silvercorpmetals.com, ticker symbol SVM in the U.S. and Canada. Remember to treat your portfolio with a core position in Silvercorp Metals.
Gold Seek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.
This is Robert Ian with GoldSeek.com Radio. An article headline that recently appeared on the AARP website stated, IRS demands proof of health insurance, and the taxes filed in 2018 would require filers to indicate coverage. The article by Gary Strauss of AARP outlined how the IRS won't process individual tax returns in 2018 unless taxpayers indicate whether they have health insurance coverage or an exemption. In other words, this change makes 2018 the first time the IRS will not accept tax returns that omit this information, which one might suspect could potentially lead to other kinds of penalties like failure to file penalties, failure to pay penalties, plus interest, plus the normally sanctioned penalties for not having health insurance, which for 2017 is the higher of 2.5% of adjusted gross income, or $695 per adult and $347.50 per child under 18 with a family maximum of $2,085. So no matter how you slice it, the costs add up and quickly offset some or all of any refund a person may have coming. Thanks to a do-nothing Congress on health care, who would still rather argue like Monday morning quarterbacks and be against the outcome of the 2016 election, instead of putting on their big boy and big girl pants and standing for what they were elected to do for citizens of the United States, it now appears the IRS has also given up on any guidance from Congress in the form of actual laws. IRS spokesman Bruce Friedland said, "This process reflects the requirements of the Affordable Care Act and the IRS's obligation to administer the health care law. It also appears the IRS has decided to strictly enforce the Obamacare employer mandate for the first time since its inception, and will start handing out penalties to companies with 50 employees or more that fail to provide affordable insurance to full-time employees and dependents. I contend healthcare was the pivotal issue in the 2016 presidential election. People always vote their pocketbooks. 2018 will be no different. Congress, look out." And until next time, this is Robert Ian with ConquerChange.com, reminding you to follow us on Twitter at Conquer Change. Thanks, Chris.
Okay, Robert, thanks for another excellent installment. Well, that wraps up this week's GoldSeek.com radio episode. For two new big guests, be sure to check out next week's show. Until we talk to you again, have a great week.
GoldSeek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.